Well, first, I'd like to thank the organizer for allowing me a chance to speak here. And so today I'll be speaking on something that's quite different. So it's a nice weather, so we probably would take a detour from the usual thing that we heard about. I mean, the conference is very specifically directed towards the Panavay equations. What I'll be talking about is an outgrowth of a different version of it, stemmed from the work of Rod Halbert and Arborowitz and Herbst and Kohonen. So my approach is totally function theoretic. However, it would not be too complicated. I'll mostly present the result that we feel that's interesting, and then I will draw some applications to different equations, and then that will be more or less the end. So it wouldn't take that much of time. So the motivation is that in recent years, there's quite a bit of work about finding out integrability condition of discrete Panavay. In particular, the singularity confinement was the most effective method of identifying the discrete Panavay in the complex plane. So one of the special case is this y of n plus 1 plus y of n minus 1. These were maps in the complex plane, and the right-hand side has got a rational in yn, constant coefficient. Now, and the method was very efficient, but probably a bit hard to understand the reason behind. So I think a very beautiful idea that put forward by Arborowitz, Halbert, and Herbst in 2000 was that perhaps the nonlinear theory would be useful in identifying these Panavay equations, but in the complex plane instead. So one has to translate the whole thing onto the complex plane and in terms of function rather than just complex maps. And the idea was first carried out in a very rough way, and then it was eventually shown to be quite successful for this particular type of difference equation in the complex plane. So y here is now assumed to be meromorphic, and I think both Rod Halbert and Risto Kohonen has already explained that about some of this in the previous talks. And R is a rational function, polynomial in y and polynomial in y, both in the numerator and denominator, and with coefficient x polynomial in z. Their theory was able to show that if we require any meromorphic solution to this equation to have finite order of growth, then they will be able to classify all these known Panavay equations. So they actually have a list, which you have already seen, which includes many well-known Panavay equations of the class 2. And in particular, this equation was among the list, which was the prime suspects of the discrete Panavay. Well, I don't really belong to this area, so my language is a little bit loosey. Okay, now, so this is basically the motivation a few years back when we tried to look at this from the nonlinear viewpoint. But before I start, I'd like to describe a bit about exceptional sets. You see, we're dealing with meromorphic functions, and so therefore when you hit poles at certain place in a complex plane, you cannot really do much analysis, so we want to avoid them. And the way to avoid them is very natural in our consideration is to look at this measure, and you integrate this over the real line from 1 to infinity. And if this integral is finite, you say this is a finite log measure. If it's infinite, then it's infinite log measure. And these two examples can be easily checked that one has finite log measure, the other has infinite log measure. So in any case, if you have a finite log measure set, then outside this set, you would still have quite a lot of space to move around in the complex plane where you can do your analysis. So that's the idea behind. Okay, now we come back to this very familiar. I hope it's familiar to you now. It's already the third one, probably the last one. Oh no, the fourth one. Yeah, probably the last one. Is that the lemma of logarithmic derivative of this little m, or what we call the proximity function. So here is the definition for little m. You take the modulus of f and integrate it. Take the average of log f. This quantity is very important. The major contribution of it is that this quantity is of order of log of the Navalina characteristic as r goes to infinity. In other words, it is small compared to the Navalina characteristic. That's the key idea, that the Navalina theory works. Okay, so that is probably the first and the last slide that we would actually see the T for this talk. I'm not going to use it very much for the rest. All we need to know is that this characteristic function, defined this way, that if this lim sub of log of T over log of R is finite, then we say the function has finite order. You see the theory of Arbowitz, Hobart and Herbst works only if the function has finite order of growth. So naturally, we want to impose this condition. Well, if that's the case, then a natural thing to ask would be if there is a discrete analog of logarithmic derivative, which is this quantity, if there is such a quantity. And in general, you can see that if I pick a function of infinite order, that is e of z, and you look at the ratio between f of z plus 1 over f of z, then basically you get the same function out. And this function, and also this function, both have infinite order. So in other words, if you look at an arbitrary meromorphic or entire function, you don't get much out by looking at the ratio. It's not going to grow anything slower. So therefore, the finite order assumption is crucial. And it turns out that both Halbert and Kohonen was able to show a version of this. And then I and Fan also showed this more or less independently, that if you assume only finite order, then this you can manage to get the estimate on the right-hand side, where the growth of this part is small compared to the characteristic function for a finite order function sigma. So it's just slightly down, just by one, but that's sufficient to build on top of that. Now, I'm not going to go into details of that. And in fact, Halbert and Kohonen was able to build a version of Navalina theory for periodic function by using this idea. For the rest of the talk, I want to concentrate on the growth of f of z plus 1 over f. It's very simple. Just a bit of history. This J.M. Whittaker, who's the son of the E.T. Whittaker, who wrote the famous book with Watson that you all know on analysis, actually looked at the growth of f of z plus beta minus f long time ago. He was asking the question whether for which beta that you choose, this difference would have growth in the complex plane that is smaller than f itself. And of course, if f is periodic and if beta is the period of the periodic function, then this would be identically zero, so it's not very much there. Okay. Well, I also don't want to elaborate on this, so I want to go straight into what we want to say today. So in the same paper with Fan, we actually got the pointwise estimate. So instead of looking at the average on the big unit circle, the big circle, we actually look at the direct ratio of f of z plus 1 over f. And we also have this estimate that is it is less than the right-hand side. So whenever f has finite order, then this holds. Outside a set of finite log measures. So as you go along, anywhere in a complex plane, if you avoid a set of finite log measure, then this estimate will hold for any given epsilon. And that's a universal estimate without any other assumption except the order assumption on f. And this is actually a classical analog of a result by Gunderson that he got a very sharp estimate that f prime over f satisfies this condition. And you notice that this part is exactly the same as that part, except for the exponential factor. And this result works for all finite order meromorphic function, and also outside set of finite log measure. So we thought this is nice, and so the idea that using finite order as the criteria of separating discrete Panovitz turns out to have a separate interesting life in function theory. This was an estimate that somehow people didn't see for almost 90 years. Okay, so we thought maybe something more is behind. So very recently, we were able to show if you take an arbitrary meromorphic function, just look at this quantity where eta is any fixed number, any finite order meromorphic function, and then for any epsilon, we were able to show the ratio between this f of z plus eta over f of z is actually asymptotic to this quantity, e to the eta times f prime over f, plus an error term where beta is some small number. And this holds in the whole complex plane outside, except for this finite log measure set on the complex plane. Well, in fact, we did a little more. We can show that this, although holds for all finite order meromorphic function, but if you assume the order of f is strictly less than 1, then you can actually get the difference quotient grows the same as the derivative. Since the order is less than 1, this order term actually tells you that 2 sigma minus 2 is negative, so it goes to 0. In fact, these two terms both go to 0, but the error term goes to 0 even faster. So we establish a complete asymptotic for these two quantity, therefore function with order less than 1, which is a bit of surprise. And we look up literature trying to find anything of this sort, because it has been a very old subject, I mean, ever since Vallelon, ever since, Polya and these peoples, 100 years ago. And it turns out that we were not able to find anything like this. So this holds for all z except for a finite log measure set in a complex plane. And nothing like this would hold if the function has order bigger than or equal to 1. So you don't get a direct analogy between these two. And if you work a little harder by looking at the higher order case, so if you define the difference operator the usual way, you can actually prove that, there's a bracket missing, there's a k derivative. I can't change, nothing much I can do about it now. So you can actually get a direct comparison with a higher order difference and a higher order derivative. Now this may not look very impressive. I'm not sure if this is impressive anyway, but it would be very useful for us in a minute of time that I show you. And from there, we deduce some interesting estimate. For example, this estimate is known for the kth derivative when function of order is finite order. And if function has order less than 1, then we were able to deduce the exact analog of the derivative estimate as the right, Modena. Okay. this also works if you have k and j, where k and j are arbitrary integers, and k is bigger than j, then this also works. So this works exactly in the same analogy as the differential case, except that we need the function to have finite order less than 1, where this estimate works for all finite order. As we already saw, if function has order bigger than 1, you need an exponential factor here, so it would not work. Okay. Now, I want to explain a little bit about the idea behind why this is true. So actually, it's very simple. If you take e to the eta as the operator that you add eta to z, and evaluate f there, then you can have this, you can write the shift, so-called, in terms of the derivatives as a formal series. And then this formal series can actually be written as the exponential of eta d, where d is the differential operator. So formally, you have this kind of relation. And now if you write delta f can be written in terms of e minus 1. And though formally, therefore, you have delta is equal to e to the n d minus 1, and raised to the power k would therefore be the same on both sides. And now you expand this, and you expand this, you add on f, and so after you expand it, you get the whole thing out. And then, of course, this is formal. It doesn't work in general. But if the function doesn't grow too fast, perhaps there is a chance that this would converge. And that was exactly what we show, that if the order is less than 1, this part converges, so disappear, becoming an error term, and we only left with the first part, which gives us the leading estimate that we just saw over here. So that's roughly the idea behind. And in practice, this wasn't what happened, but the idea is coming from there. Okay, so after all these classical type estimate, okay, we look at a slightly different topic, only for entire function. So if I have given an entire function, which converges everywhere in the complex plane in terms of power series, since the power series would converge for each fixed z, so therefore somehow as the terms, individual terms in the summation, would reach a maximum and then decrease. So there is a maximum term somewhere in the power series expansion. And I call this nu. And the nu, of course, will change when R changes. And so we call this largest integer m, for which this term is equal to the maximum term. And then I call this m that appears there, n, when this equality holds, the central index of the function. So you're looking at the n for which you will actually have the maximum term. And in practice, there will be quite a number of maximum terms, so you take the largest one out of this. And it turns out that there is an interesting thing that you can say about this maximum term, is that if you take log of nu and divide it by log r and take lim sup, that's exactly equal to the order of the function. So that's interesting. But this is actually very old, proved by, goes back all the way to Valilon, almost 90 years ago. Well, in fact, a lot earlier. I think Riemann was probably the first one to do it in 1870s, and then Valilon improved it and in the 1920s. What we want to look at is this quantity here. So this quantity is kth derivative can also be written over f, of course. Can also be written in terms of the central index when the function is near its maximum in the complex plane. So you think about the big radius r, and you travel along this big radius r in the complex plane, and somewhere it will reach its maximum, and it is roughly around that little area that this estimate will hold. So the central index holds. Now this, again, doesn't look very impressive, but it turns out to be very useful. Well, first, of course, I'd like to say that this would also work for the difference operator in this way, but only when function has order less than 1. Then, because the earlier result that we relayed our difference operator to the differential operator asymptotically, so we can translate the Riemann-Valilon estimate directly to our difference operator. So for all the less than 1 function, we also have this central index kind of estimate. And this error term, however, is slightly different from the classical one. The classical one is very simple. It's 1 plus little o 1. Our one is more complicated. The good thing is that it still goes to 0 faster than this term, so might be useful. Okay? I'd like to mention that actually this Riemann-Valilon theory was first, for difference operator, was first developed by Ishizaki and Yanagihara in just a few years ago. And however, their construction is not simple. They have to expand the function, the entire function, in terms of the factorial series, or the binomial series, if you like, you know, there are different names for this. So it's just this one. And they are talking about a central index, nu star, with respect to this series expansion, which could be difficult to calculate. Their theory only works when the function has order half. So there's a bit of restriction. The advantage of our theory is that we got it work for all function of order less than 1, and we think that you cannot extend this to go to beyond bigger than order bigger than 1. So in a way, this is sharp. Okay, so Well, this is one of the interesting theory that I thought. Hope you agree. Well, suppose I look at this polynomial difference equation in a complex plane where the coefficients are all polynomial. And then suppose F is a solution with order less than 1, entire solution of order less than 1. Then I can say something about the growth of the solution, the entire function. That is, the order would have to be equal to a number chi, and this chi is a rational number positive, which can be determined from the associated algebraic equation, which can be determined from the gradients of the so-called Newton-Tussaud diagram. So now, eventually, I've got some relation with this conference about Newton. We're in Newton Institute. So we can construct a Newton-Tussaud diagram, which is kind of polygon, and then look at its gradients. And the gradients of the associated algebraic equation of this equation, then the gradient will tell us what are the possible order of growth of this chi. So this is the chi. I'll try to explain how it works. It's not that complicated. Well, you suppose you only write down the leading terms of each polynomial, and then you substitute. You see the k difference over f is written by this central index I just mentioned. And you can actually make this little O1 to happen if you work very hard. Okay, and we did. It does work, but only on a sequence of R in the complex plane, not for the all R except for a finite measure in the case of classical one. But anyway, we do have this for the sequence, and so if we plug this whole thing in this equation and we arrange the terms and keeping only the first order term in this polynomial, you're going to get this this algebraic equation. It looks like algebraic asymptotically. And then you can actually forget about this little O1 term and turn it into a real algebraic equation by applying the implicit function theorem and some kind of continuity argument, that you can actually consider this only. And so this is an algebraic function for nu, and then you use the standard algebraic function techniques that you can actually construct. You can actually find out the growth of nu from the associated Newton polygon of this equation. For example, I'm taking this equation that Ishizaki and Yanagihara constructed. It's a polynomial equation of order 3, and then it turned out that you get the gradient to be exactly 1/3. I could actually show you. One slide. So, goodbye Dina for a while. Okay. So if you, there is this little kind of half plane set that you need to set up according to this degree. So it's A3 is 2, A2 is 1, A1 is 0, A0 is 0. And then using this data, you actually construct 4 sets of a quarter quadrant. And you take the union of this, and then you take the convex hull out of this. And after that, you will notice that this is the only slope that you can see out of the construction. And this slope is actually 1/3. Okay. You can actually find a complete theory description on this. If you look at Hiller's book, Analytic Function Theory, Volume 2, there is a description of that. Okay. And I'd like to make a very quick remark, that is, this is a differential case proved by Vallilong long time ago. For differential equation with polynomial coefficient, they actually have a complete asymptotic in their construction for the entire solution, whereas we only got order estimates. And also, a few years back, Bertweiler, Ishizaki, Yanagihara, and in fact, a bit long time ago, in 92, Ramiz also showed that if you look at two different linear equations, you can also compute the growth by using the Newton diagram, where this chi is the gradient of the Newton diagram. Look at this is the chi here for the difference one, and this chi here is for the difference, a differential one. This is for the Q difference equation. So we were able to do this for the discrete equation, but only for function, so solution for order less than 1. Okay. Another thing I want to mention was a very classical result of Polya. again, very long time ago. If you look at any algebraic, first order algebraic differential equation with polynomial coefficient, then any entire solution would have positive order of growth. And this result was proved by using the classical Riemann-Vallilong theory that I just mentioned earlier for differential case. And because of our machinery that we just shown for the difference, exactly the same proof we actually produced that if you look at any first order algebraic difference equation, then any entire solution of this equation would have to have a positive order of growth. So you're not allowed to have very slow growth. For example, in the case of Q difference linear equation, which includes many well-known special function of say Q difference operator, the order of growth is like log R squared. It's very slow. So if you actually compute the order will be zero. And this is not allowed for this one. Okay? So my time is almost up. Promise? Okay. Well, promise. Then I spend 1 minute on the proof. The idea, as I just mentioned, is very different from the heuristic reasoning that I gave. You again look at this famous Poisson-Jensen formula. The difference is that the classical one would have a modulus on F. So you're looking at the real part of log F, where we look at the whole, including the imaginary part. And then if you compute log of Z plus eta over F and minus eta F prime over eta, then you will actually get a whole bunch of rather terrible expression out on the right-hand side. And so from here, you can already see that this log F is divided by this kind of quadratic factor. So it already slows down the growth. The problem comes from the contribution that comes from the zeros and the poles, which I haven't listed. It's exactly this, well, it's almost the same kind of terms that with the A replaced by the poles. I guess I have a bit of mistake here. It should be A nu and also these are, well, there's two other terms that looks almost the same, which I don't want to list all out, okay? There's slight mistakes there. It turns out that if you work hard enough, careful enough, you can actually estimate all these terms, and using this inequality, that works for all complex number in the complex plane, then as you let R goes to infinity, you'll be able to show that this is less than log R, less than modulus of Z times sigma minus 1 plus epsilon. So somehow it works. So that's roughly the idea behind. Okay, so I better finish. So today we look at a very simple comparison between these two quantities. And this comparison was not seen so far, so we were quite happy. But on the other hand, we were also surprised that for so many years, people did not actually got this estimate, this comparison out. And then the main thing that we got, I believe, is that the growth between the difference and the derivative is almost the same if the function has order less than 1. If the order is bigger than or equal to 1, then they differ by exponential factor. And if order is equal to 1, this would be most complicated, and we don't know how to deal with that yet. And then we obtain a difference Riemann-Vallilong theory, which allows us to estimate the small entire solution of any linear equation, difference equation. Small means order less than 1. So that's more or less I want to say.